Hey, listeners. We've been looking for a better way to connect with you, get your feedback, and build a fantastic guild of six-figure devers. So, we started a Slack channel. Come and join us, geek out about nerdy things, find mentors, be a mentor, and help us build an awesome community. Just go to slack.sixfiguredev.com to get your invite. We'll see you there. Hello and welcome to the Six Figure Developer Podcast, the podcast where we talk about new and exciting technologies, professional development, clean code, career advancement, and more. I am John Calloway.
I'm Clayton Hunt.
And I'm John Ash.
With us today is Jared Rhodes. Jared is a Microsoft MVP for Azure, Xamarin certified developer, and overall technology enthusiast. He specializes in Azure IoT offerings, Azure Functions, Elasticsearch, and many other technologies. Welcome, Jared.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So Jared, before we get started, would you just give us a little bit of an introduction, maybe how you got started in the industry?
So I went to college and I didn't really have much guidance. So I decided to pick physics as a major. And as I went through my physics major, I made friends. I was at an engineering school and they were on the sonar or the autonomous underwater vehicle team. And they needed someone to help them with sonar. So they asked me, I typed it up in MathCAD, made some diagrams and showed them how it should work. And they were like, this is useless. we need you to write some of this. And they were doing it on, all of their code was in C. So they're like, just write it in C. So I just went and I figured out how to write some of this stuff in C. And then when I graduated, that was way more marketable than my physics degree.
Very nice. So, so you went from MathCAD to C and then C makes you marketable. So what are you doing these days?
I always tell people ask me like, oh, so what do you do? Because, you know, I'll tell them like what are whatever, like Microsoft MVP, whatever. So what do? I answer a lot of emails. So what I really do is I'm doing a lot of Plural Sight videos and I just got off of my last gig, which is a connected car company based out of California. And now I'm just doing the Plural Sight videos until I stumble into something else.
The connected car, is that like, okay, Google, but in your car or something else?
So since I've done a lot with the IoT offerings, a lot of companies I work for are startups, almost in the purest sense. So they were a connected car company in that their primary moneymaker was connected car technology. So it was some of it was OnStar style. If you got into a wreck, it would call 911. And there were other like sort of segueing into driverless cars. They had a bunch of different stuff under their heading and they were sort of working on a bunch of different things. My primary focus was cleaning up the Azure instances and making sure all their VMs were set up properly and all that.
Very cool.
So you mentioned that you're doing the Plural Sight thing while you are in between jobs before you stumble onto the next one. How do you typically stumble across IoT and connected devices offerings? Like, is that something that is sought after these days in the industry?
I don't know if it's sought after enough for enough people, but I knew enough people that, and I do this sort of in a niche field that people do reach out to me.
And these days you're talking a lot about AI on the edge. Do you want to give us just a brief overview of what those terms mean?
So, I've got a course. I just finished signing the paperwork for it. And the next one I'll do on Pluralsight is designing intelligent edge for AI. And as I've been doing edge, and I'll put edge in quotes, edge, fog, whatever they were calling it as they did it. It's hard not to sound cynical. So, but I'm going to give you the edge definition and it's going to sound kind of cynical. Right now, the advertising for edge is what's not in the cloud. They've got pretty much everything listed. If you go to the Microsoft Future of the Cloud page for in Azure, I mean, they list HoloLens 2, the Kinect SDK, the drones, Azure Sphere. I mean, it's everything that is not in the cloud. In more of what I do for edge computing, it's very much either gateways. So you have a device that multiple devices connect to, or it's a sort of a private cloud, private data center connected to the public cloud. And then for the AI utilization with that, that's mainly the cloud. If you have money, the cloud can keep doing things for you. And training AI is one of those things that is perfect in the cloud. You just spend more money, you get more trainings. And then the edge is where you actually run those trained models.
Okay, yeah. So that was going to be my question was, are you doing... You're often not doing the training on the edge device. You're usually leveraging the cloud for most of the training, or
correct?
Okay, and then the models themselves are just sort of a function that comes out that can be pretty run by even something fairly low powered usually.
Fairly, and I want to stick with fairly low powered. Just don't get too excited. I see all these demos online where it's like, I set up this camera feed with my Raspberry Pi and they work pretty well, but I just want to set expectations on exactly what kind of compute power you have. Don't expect to train. In fact, the tools available through Cognitive Services give you the ability to pick a model for the edge and a model for the cloud. So just be careful on how deep these models go when you're starting to run them on limited hardware.
Very cool. Yeah. No, I think it's a good thing. And I think it's a pretty big, I work for, my client is in the industrial sector and there's limited connectivity to the cloud. And so the idea of having one of those gateway devices, it really is a great way for them to introduce AI into the information that they're collecting. The manufacturers have a lot of data that they're using, and you'd traditionally have to like pipe that back into something a more traditional database, or have all of that power sort of on site. And to be able to have something that you can quickly filter through the data and get key alerts or something like that, maybe you still save that data off to a traditional means and can kind of process that later, but there's a lot of opportunities there, and we're seeing that. So I think it's good work.
You've been working, looks like you've got three courses right now out on Pluralsight, and sounds like maybe more in the future. What are the types of courses that you're primarily working on these days?
They've got, I think, six in the queue for me through the end of the year. So they're all right now in the AI tracks, different Azure AI and some other AI courses, because that's what people really want to see right now is. So there's this thing that's going on in the industry where we can go to like Glassdoor or LinkedIn Salary, and data scientist or something with machine learning in it is up there towards the top. And a lot of people see that and they gravitate to it. That's if I want to make the next stepping stone, you know, corporate's telling me it's a principal engineer or manager, and neither one of those is making what data scientist is. And for most of the AI work, it's just like being a developer who builds websites. Most of the AI work is not the work that they're listing at the top of that salary chart. Right. These are top of the salary chart, sometimes advanced degrees, but at least like 10 years experience. And they can take that idea of a machine learning, a machine learning model, and take it from data to model. Whereas for most people getting started, it's just going to be the majority of the work is boring. It's data cleansing. It's getting your data organized. It's figuring out how to say like. Figuring out what data is important, it isn't important, blah, 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 blah.
So those top salaries are for an actual trained data scientist, not for I went on Azure with my free month credit and set up a Microsoft chatbot.
I believe so. But I am making those AI courses. And so a lot of those courses are geared around just what concepts you need to have in your back pocket when you want to get started with an AI solution, and then doing some of those tasks that I feel like is getting. So we did the Azure Bootcamp, and one of the questions we were asked at the Azure Bootcamp was, how do I get into this machine learning, this AI stuff? And the truth is, the same way that most people get into web development or they get into any other technology, I 5 years ago, I would have told people, do Angular. If you want to get into web development, learn Angular. There's a lot of Angular jobs out there right now. And so if you want to get into machine learning, some of the best ways to make that foot in the door transition is learn something like Databricks, learn how to use Data Lake, just something to get started. And so the courses are, what is designing an edge solution? So learning what edge is and learning what those use cases are and how that technology interacts with it. And some of them are how to cleanse your data, how to get data to train with. Just those initial things that if you want to get in that part of the industry to get started, that's what you need to do.
So if I say I've got a Raspberry Pi because somebody showed me something cool on it one time, and so I got one, and now it's just collecting dust somewhere. Would the information in one of your courses get me to the point where I could load some kind of model onto the Pi and have some fun with it and like do a thing, or is that more complicated or different subject matter than what the courses would cover right now?
I'll be very specific. For the Edge course, you would be able to get a Raspberry Pi. You would be able to deploy machine learning models to it. But I want to be specific. What I'll showcase is how to use Azure's IoT Edge, which deploys a container for you that wraps that model. So when you use cognitive services, you can do it multiple ways. You can get a container that for services that support it. You can get a container and deploy that container. And for other services that support it, you can just download the Onyx model or the TensorFlow model and then go on the documentation. It tells you like you could copy and paste that code, and that copy and pasted code will produce results for you.
Okay. I don't know about Onyx, but TensorFlow is Pi or Python, right? So you'd have to know some Python to mess with that, or...
If you wanted to jump down the rabbit hole that I went down while trying to get it to work on a project where I only had access to C++, technically, TensorFlow is written in C++. It is most popularly used in Python. And for the longest time, somehow, you could only train in Python, but the actual underlying code was written in C++. It's just they wrote enough Python code to make it work. But I think Miguel de Casa wrote the bindings for C#. So there's something there. I think if you go to his GitHub, you can use it in C#. And you can use it now in C++ to train and load. You can use it in Python. There's a bunch of other bindings. But as you asked, is it Python? Not technically. Do you want to do something with it to get started? Go find the Python libraries.
So you can get around it, but the easiest way is Python right now.
Yes, the Python code usually is just click here and then change the file path for your model file.
So if you're looking for the quick copy and paste from Stack Overflow, it's all going to be in Python.
Yes.
Perfect. And it looks like you're doing a lot of speech to text and text to speech SDKs and APIs. You want to talk a little bit about that?
Well, I did the two courses for speech to text and text to speech. And it's, to be honest, I feel like I'm chasing a bit of a moving target. With a lot of the AI offerings, for the course I just signed for, we've had one call with Microsoft so that they could get exactly what they wanted in certain sections. And we have to schedule another one to even get the last section to know what products they think of as the premier AI products moving forward. So I did the courses for those and I played around with it to get everything working. There's some interesting use cases that people have put together using that, I believe. And don't, if you're listening, maybe. So they told me this is what I'll say. So they told me Domino's, if you call, they have some pilot stores out there that you never interact with the person to order that pizza, right? You call. So if you use speech to text, you can automatically integrate Lewis with the SDK. So you can go ahead, and that's for those who don't know, Lewis is the language understanding. So that's what they build chatbots with and other like language recognition. So you can integrate that directly with speech to text so that instead of just getting the text, you actually get the intents and entities that you would get through Lewis. And then you can use those with text to speech to drive the responses to try to get that full order complete without ever having to have a human being involved. And for something as simple as ordering a pizza, apparently they've got pilot stores where they're already doing it. That's what they told me in January, at least.
That's awesome. So I'm sure that I I have a simplified understanding of speech to text in my head, but the one that I'm kind of interested in is text to speech. So I had this program back in the 90s that came with my Sound Blaster audio card that was called Dr. Spatzo. And you could type to him and he would respond, and you could tell him to say things and he would say them. What's changed in text to speech since then? I mean, he did an all right job, but I'm sure it's better now, right?
I believe that what's changed in it is the same thing that's changed in everything after 2006. So 2006 was when we had that big landmark research on deep neural networks that everyone saw, liked, and we started moving forward with. So with text-to-speech through cognitive services, you still have that sort of original where we can use the traditional text-to-speech where it's more algorithmic. You know, it someone had to write a lot of code to make sure that the audio comes out. But there's also the neural versions, which sound much more human and sound much more conversational. And then there's the further ability with neural that if you have the time and the inclination, you can create your own voice if you really want to.
So are we getting close to a Turing test, like having a conversation and not realizing that you're speaking to a computer?
Yeah, I think so. I think you've seen Google has tried it, and they had it at, what's Google's big conference's name? Okay. And so they had it there where they showcased, like, they were like Android. They had that thing where you could call up, and they had the assistant, and everything worked just fine. And I haven't seen anything since. But, you know, from talking with Domino's, they had it to where you could call up, order a pizza. You didn't have to interact with a human being. So yeah, I guess in that case, we're already there in limited cases. But there is this whole other limitation with AI that a lot of people, you sort of miss. Until you've actually done a lot of AI and you realize sort of what's going on under the covers, you sort of project a human experience onto what it's doing. And so that test it'll pass in the case of ordering a pizza. But then when you ask it things that are more of a human experience, it's going to get lost. Even if you put a lot of work into it, it's going to get lost when we get into a more human experience question.
So like, hey, Lewis, I'd like a pepperoni pizza. And what did you do last Wednesday? And it.
Well, even that one actually isn't that bad because it's got understanding of it's the what you were doing. But that one's kind of a solved thing, too, if it has a understanding of some record of anything back then. Right.
Right.
It would be more like. I'm trying to think of good relation, like trying to get it, when's the next big sports event near you, you know, something that would be more of a human experience, which I'm having trouble verbalizing right now. I guess right, I can see it more than I can talk about it.
Maybe if you said something like, don't use that tone with me, or, you know, like sort of like referred to some other element or asked made a statement in the form of a question or something.
Yeah, like trying to ask it, how long will it take to get there with traffic? And, you know, other apps would be able to handle that because they're geared for traffic, but the pizza app's not going to know.
Right.
Yeah, my wife recently got my 6-year-old son electronic assistant for his room. So it'll read him stories and he can play some kind of voice games with it and like Marvel Adventures and simulated trainings. But it's interesting to hear him interact with it because he doesn't fully grasp that his assistant didn't really understand the context of the question he was asking it. So, you know, you can't ask it question A, then question B, and then a caveat to the original question A because it's already forgotten question A, right? So it seems like that AI and machine learning and this whole industry is moving incredibly fast, which I assume is quite difficult to keep like Pluralsight courses updated, for example. Is it moving so fast and things are changing so rapidly that it's hard to keep up? Or is it moving at the same pace it's always moved at and it's just becoming a little bit more mainstream at this point?
The public cloud changed a lot of how people can utilize these big, massive machines to do trainings. And then the hardware industry is catching up as well and how you can have specialized hardware to run it. But as far as keeping up, I don't know. I feel like it moves quick, but I gave up on keeping up with web frameworks a long time ago. So it doesn't move that fast.
So there weren't six new AI frameworks invented in the last half hour?
Not that worked, no.
You talked to some of your IoT background. I wondered if we could go a little bit more into sort of that element of where you see that was obviously a pretty buzzwordy thing that kind of sprung up. And I don't think that's completely gone away, but I definitely don't see sort of the continued demand of it. Do you think it's sort of in its rising tide, or where do you think that industry is going to be moving?
As far as IoT goes, I guess we did that thing that we always do with the buzzwords. It found its spot. I mean, IoT primarily for me was always geared towards hardware manufacturers. I mean, you said yourself, you're with an industrial client or a manufacturing client. And for them, the IoT wasn't anything. It was, for a lot of them, it wasn't anything.
Right. They were already doing it.
Yeah, it was already there. They already did everything involved. There's things from when we worked with manufacturers, there are things that IoT and the edge computing will bring in. I mean, for most manufacturers that we worked with, they had a network. Their security model was, if you're on our network, you're on our network. There's no like identity or anything. Once you're here, you're good. And so IoT could help there, but primarily it was for those hardware manufacturers, whether it be like a Honeywell or some making the devices, Texas Instruments, someone who makes devices, makes that hardware, and that hardware can then utilize all of these new services and features to connect to the cloud. However, again, most of it wasn't like it was new. Honeywell has their products. They've been doing hardware for many, many years. So for them, there was this add-on that could be added to certain product lines. And so IoT is still, if you're in industry, it's very much more niche, but there's still a lot of stuff happening there. But they've stopped walking out at, build and saying IoT, having the IoT sign out there with 10 team members to talk about it. Now they've got AI and the AI sign goes out. And I think AI will fall into sort of the similar bucket to where the gap fill that it provides will be solved. And most people understand like, oh, that's for that over there.
Yeah, it seems like kind of what you're saying is like the people, it really is helpful for the hardware manufacturers that would be doing that AI or IoT devices, right? But then the problem was really the power of the IoT is really where we have the functionality that it's tying into. And the functionality isn't always there. And that's what we're kind of building up. And so as the functionality kind of comes back, as we get better AI that we can tie into in cloud offerings, now we all of a sudden it might start making more sense to have different IoT devices, but it doesn't necessarily make sense to have all of these IoT devices that are everywhere, in especially even in the non-industrial environments, right? Consumer level IoT, which consumer level IoT is obviously growing, and the areas like home security and those areas certainly filled those niches. But it seems like there was a need for the services for them to connect to. So the things like text-to-speech, the speech-to-text and even the chaining of all of those services in the cloud just weren't there yet. But as we kind of build those out, it seems like it would be, we'll probably find more newer IoT problems that will be solved with that form factor.
And you're also going to see the marketing start to have a nice delineation to where back when it was just IoT without edge, they really were holding, it's sort of like with the AI and machine learning, I'll get to that, but with IoT before they really got into the edge, where else were they going to put a bunch of these different product offerings? They were going to keep putting them under the IoT brand because they didn't have, I mean, you guys have seen how Microsoft, and I don't know how much AWS has done this or Amazon has done this, but with Microsoft, like, everything for a while was named Windows, and now we've moved on to the phase where everything's named Azure. And so a subset of that was IoT. So a lot of the products just sort of got shoved in there because that was the word that was marketed, or those were the words that was marketed. Now with Edge, you'll see a nice delineation between, you'll see, it's easy to see now, like there's Azure Sphere, And everyone can look at it and it's like, okay, that's a microcontroller. I understand that's IoT. That's a device that connects to the cloud. And then you have IoT Edge, which I'm assuming more people will learn about, but like, oh, okay, that goes on a box. That goes on a box that has compute power and other things probably connect to it.
No, that's a really good point. I really appreciate that. Yeah, that's an excellent point.
Yeah, and to Ash's point, you know, it sounds like IoT is really finding its home and people are really understanding it. To both your points, people are really understanding it and where it fits and what it's good at. With AI, machine learning, cognitive services, and those things, you know, I'm still seeing demos that, like, sentiment analysis. You know, we're going through and we're tracking comments on a blog post or responses to a survey and tracking whether it's a feel good or a feel bad experience to the masses. Beyond that, I'm not sure that I've seen very many demos, because I think it's primarily because it's difficult to come up with a scenario that makes sense for a demo. So I wonder, what is that next demo that makes sense in a business setting that is more than just people feel good about our product or people feel bad about our product?
I have to think on that one. I mean, they're coming out again today. They announced they've reorganized. They've got that personalization services. I forget exactly what they called it, but they're coming out with that new decision offering under cognitive services, with the ability to help you basically make those, for lack of a better word, those decisions, right? Now, instead of processing that neural data, I've always labeled it personally as neural data, of like vision and speech, things that you have to look at trends rather than being able to like write an algorithm to easily parse it. Same thing with decision. I guess with decision, you're going to be able to feed it in previous. The demo I saw, if I remember correctly, was if you're Netflix and you want to suggest what do I want to watch next, or you're Amazon and what might I buy next, sort of making that easier now so that I can just plug in the historical data, click train, and now I've got a model in which I can use to help predict you buying one more item out of the store.
Which, does anybody else feel like Netflix is way overtrained? I'm just like, I only get 6 shows now.
Same thing with Amazon, though, right? If I buy a vacuum cleaner, they've taken that as the start of a long vacuum collection career that I'm starting.
Yeah, I had to live tweet yell at 1-800-CONTACTS to say, I just ordered a year's worth of contacts. You don't need to send me a reminder email weekly asking if I want to buy more.
I do like seeing ads pasted all over the internet for something that I bought on a whim 3 weeks ago.
Yeah. And I will say that I did, you know, I have worked in finance and banking, and one thought idea was whether or not the people that apply for loans, if that could be fed through a machine learning pipeline to determine whether or not that person would automatically be disqualified for whatever reason, or automatically fall into a bucket that would qualify for a special loan rate or so, something like that. So, and, you know, there are those use cases out there, but I think it's still very much in the exploratory phase for a lot of industries.
Agreed.
Very cool. One of the things we always ask everyone is if they would just give a little bit of advice to people that are just getting started. So if you can think back to, you know, what you might have liked to have known when you were just getting started in the industry, what words of wisdom might you be able to offer?
It's funny, because when you get to sort of like a more senior level role, I feel like the advice I'll give is like what I want to project down now. Like, what do I want to see when I have to work with you? And I don't know if it's always the best advice to give, because I didn't do that. I did the other thing that I don't want. So for what I'll go with what I would want, and then what you should probably do. Just because what I want would be, just because you don't understand it doesn't mean that like we have to redo it or rework it. You know, it doesn't mean that we have to start over, basically. Just because you don't understand it, just because it's something new to you, for a lot of people, like, we were there when it was written. Like, we saw it. We know it's not great, and we live with it. But even when we wrote it back then, it worked, and it still works now. So that's what I like to say, is now that I'm in the senior role and I have to fight that battle every once in a while. And then I'll give the opposite advice of when you're new. Learn how to create those things. I mean, if I was doing it all over again, I'm not sure I would do too much different. So what I did was I went out and I met people. I went out and I got away from the computer and I went to meetings about computers. So I went to my meetup groups. I went to the code camps. I went to other events where I could network and meet people. And once you do that, you'll be A, introduced to, like I said, that stuff you don't know yet. And you'll also be able to see what everyone else is doing, what's trending, and you'll actually meet with these people, because it's not like you go to a meetup and those people are just gone a year later. I mean, we're in these industries for 20 to 40 years, so you'll be seeing these people probably for a large percentage of your life. So go out there, meet those people, and then if you're new, those people will also move up in their companies and they'll remember, oh, hey, that was Bob. Bob showed up at the meeting.
Well, what about if people just want to like contact you? Or?
So my website is jaredrhodes.com. My Twitter is Q-I-M-A-T-A, Kimata, because I own and operate Kimata Technologies. And then the same thing for LinkedIn. It's Kimata. And then obviously I'm a plural site author, so you can go look me up, Jared Rhodes. I've got 3 courses up there now, Azure, and 2 on cognitive services, and I'll have 1 on Edge and AI coming out within the next 2 months. So check me out there.
All right. Thanks, Jared. Really appreciate you coming on the show.
Thanks for having me.
That was Jared Rhodes. Jared is a Microsoft MVP for Azure, Xamarin certified developer, and overall technology enthusiast. He specializes in Azure's IoT offerings, Azure Functions, Xamarin, Elasticsearch, and many other technologies.
If you like this episode, please like, rate, and review on iTunes.
Find show notes, blog posts, and more at sixfiguredev.com.
And be sure to follow us on Twitter at sixfiguredev.
This has been another episode of the Six Figure Developer Podcast, helping others reach their potential. I'm John Calloway.
I'm Clayton Hunt.
And I'm John Ash.